A while ago, this is a long time ago. In my brain, it was the other day because it's one of those moments that you'll never forget. Back when I was married, my father-in-law, we were having a conversation one time, and he was saying, I want to do this thing that's really special for my wife. And I got to admit, this in my brain, this was like top shelf. He's like, she works in an office, and her car is parked like 100 yards away, northern Alberta. It's colder than a million cold things. And so every day she finishes work, you know, long day, she puts on all her coats, she walks out to her ice-cold car, turns it on, like, and then she sits there freezing, and she's got about a five-minute drive to get home in her freezing car. So he said, I was thinking of putting a car starter in her car so she could, like, look out the window and be like, beep, as her car heats up, and then, you know, go into a warm car, right? It's a pretty good gift, isn't it? So let me ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, how romantic is that gift? Does that count as a romantic gift? Yeah. Nice. I was blown away, and I was like, dude, that's top shelf. I'm impressed. He says, I got a problem. It's getting really expensive for the install. And I was like, well, I've installed a remote car starter before. I could do it for you. You know, I'm trying to get, like, son-in-law points here, right? He's like, really? Would you do that? Yeah, I'd totally do that. So long story short, we show up at their place up north in Alberta to go and install this amazing gift that's going to change the world. You know, his wife's going to be warm. Everything's going to be okay. It's basically world peace at this point. And so I get there. I remember walking in the door. I'm pretty stoked for this thing. I got a weekend to do this project and should go smooth. And they hand me the box. And I pull out the box and it's just a box with about 1,000 wires hanging out of it. And I'm kind of like, where's the wiring diagram? And they're like, what wiring diagram? I'm like, the one that tells me where all these wires get connected to in the car? Like, yeah, we don't have that. Okay. You know, my pride's on the line here, right? I've told them I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to do this thing. So I can't really say no. And this is before internet, when you could just go, you know, log in and find a YouTube video of a person doing the exact same thing in the exact same car with the exact same haircut as you. So I went outside, and, you know, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm fairly decent with this stuff, so I'm going, okay, well, it's kind of all within the things of what I know. I should be able to do this. Well, yeah, we'll make it work. Don't worry, I'll get this thing done. 10 hours later, I'm not getting it done. I have the car, like, getting this, it was a 1990 Saturn. Getting this thing apart was like, I almost had to take the engine out to get, like, where I needed to get to. It was unbelievably hard to get the stuff out. And then I've cut the ignition wires apart to install the car starter. So if this doesn't work, there's no way to get, like, this car is done, right? Sunday morning, I wake up. It's not, like, I'm not feeling comfortable. So I start working. It's not working. Well, it kind of, sometimes parts of it work, but most of it's not working, and the car's not starting. And then I realize I've run out of connectors. So now I have no ability to put the wires that I've cut back together again. And it's Sunday in small town northern Alberta. How many people know what that means? There is no stores open. I'm screwed. I sat out there for another 10 hours. Like, hoping for a miracle maybe? I don't know what I was hoping for. Finally, my mother-in-law comes out and she's begging me, Vince, just give up already. Who cares? I'm just like dying inside. She's like, but just come in, just have dinner with us. I'm like, no, like, I can do this. I got this. I don't have this. In the end, I took the ignition wires and I twisted them together with my fingers and I wrapped some scotch tape around them. And they were able to drive their car to a mechanic to fix it. I don't think you guys realize how that failure still sits with me. Like, even as I'm telling you guys, I'm just like, oh. Anyone failures, right? Failures in life? Like, geez. Business startups? Anyone? Don't put up your hands. Keep your hands down. I'll just be the only lone failure up here for now. You know, you start a business, you put your heart and soul into it, you think, this is going to make everything okay. However long later, you realize, I'm screwed. Right? Relationships, you pour your heart and soul, everything you got into them. When they take a left, you're going, oh. Failure is part of life. Sometimes we handle it well, sometimes we don't. Sometimes failure becomes something bigger than a failure. It's not I failed, it's I am a failure. That's when failure gets its hooks deep into us, right? There's a guy in the Christian tradition who I think was a failure. And his reaction to his own failure, I think, changed everything for our tradition. Everything. So today I want to tell you a little story about a guy named Martin. Now, Martin's a good little kid, you know, pays attention to his mom. His mom tells him not to steal. So one day when he comes into the kitchen, following this amazing smell that's been wafting out, you know, he walks in the kitchen, no one there. But out of the corner of his eye, he spies a little nut sitting on the counter, freshly roasted. He's like a little kid. What are you going to do? In his mouth. Of course, that's when his mom walks in. Martin, what are you? You know, just losing it on him for a nut. It gets worse. He writes in his biography that she takes a leather belt, hits him so hard she draws blood for eating a nut. Now, in her mind, he's stolen it. But still, do we not think that that's maybe a bit excessive? Fast forward a couple years in his life, he shows up at school. Teacher says, I want you to review the lesson. Martin, stand up, review the lesson from the end of yesterday. He stands up kind of like, you see, the teacher forgot that they ran out of time yesterday. They never got to the lesson. So here he's called to stand up in front of everyone and recite a lesson that he's never heard. But the teacher hasn't remembered that. And not only does he look like a chump in front of everyone, she beats him too. Anyone ever had a traumatic injury like broken bone, big gaping wounds? You know how pain locks memories into your mind? Can you imagine a kid whose life is consistently, anytime you fail, anytime you just miss the mark by a little bit, pain. Let's fast forward in Martin's life. He becomes a monk. So he's given up sex, normal relationships, to study and focus on the church. Now, in his tradition, it's kind of beautiful. They have this thing called confession. It's part of the Catholic tradition, right? And so the idea in confession is, I've made a mistake, I go and admit that mistake to my confessor, and they help me move past it. It's a really beautiful idea, right? But see, Martin the liar, Martin the thief, Martin the kid who can't remember the lesson, you see, that Martin, this whole confession thing gets messed up for him. He starts spending days ruminating over what's gone on in his life so he can remember everything he needs to confess, every failure, every mistake. His confessors are like, no, no, you're good, buddy. You're good. It's okay. He's like, no, I think there's more. And so he just keeps digging and digging and digging into his life, trying to find all his failures, trying to find every moment where he screws up. Now, his biography, he doesn't say this. This is my take on it. But here's a kid who's failed consistently, like we have, right? We've all been there. Only his failures led to punishment and pain and suffering. It's left him obsessed with figuring out every little thing he's done wrong and feeling like there's no way to get it all said so he can be free of it. Fast forward a couple years in his life, and this is what happens to Martin. He takes a list of stuff, and he goes to his local church. And he hammers 95 items on a list. Now, for you history buffs out there, you know I'm talking about Martin Luther, right? Martin Luther, the thief. Martin Luther, the bad student, the failure, the screw up. And what happens in this 99 items isn't all of them. I want to talk about one, because Martin Luther does something that's changed everything in the last 500 years for Christianity. Because Martin Luther says, wait a second. If connection to God is based on doing everything right, if connection to God is based on being perfect, I'm screwed. Here's a guy who just ruminates on all the things he screwed up, right? He's like, if that's what it is, we're done. And so he says this one thing. He says, sola fide, which is Latin for faith alone. And suddenly everything in the church changed. Now, let me talk about the beautiful side of what he did. The beautiful side of it is this. Martin Luther figured out a way to make screw-ups like all of us feel like we could connect with something more. That's pretty special, isn't it? Instead of thinking of all the times I failed, how bad I am, what I did wrong, oh, I just did something wrong again, okay, I'm out of this whole God thing. He made that all go away. Any screw-up that you can think of that you've done doesn't matter in sola fide. That's not bad, huh? That feels pretty good. But the question I want to wrestle with today is this. Is this the heart of our tradition? Or is this something that makes us feel better about failing? Is this actually part of our spiritual, is this part of our spiritual disciplines, this idea? Or is it something where we go, I don't know how to deal with my failure, so sola fide. I don't have to think about them anymore. To wrestle with the question, I want to tell you another story. This one's from Jesus. Now, Jesus tells parables. Again, not a real story. It's not meant to be real. It's like an object lesson. It's like a fairy tale that's super awesome. How's that? And he tells a story about this businesswoman. I would call her businesswoman. They don't actually say the gender of the person. Businesswoman. She's got tons of money, but she's leaving for a long time. And so she brings her three best employees in. To the first best employee, she says, okay, I'm going to be leaving, but I want you to manage my money. And the amount of money in the parable is just ridiculous. So it's like, you get $50 million to manage. Okay. Next employee comes in. Okay, you come in. Okay, yeah, you get, let's say, $500,000. That's what you need to manage while I'm gone. It's a lot of money, isn't it? Final employee, number three, $10,000. Now, here's the interesting part about this. I don't think this story is about managing money, because I think we're supposed to be part of this story. And how many money managers, anyone manage like a portfolio of $20 million out there? That's a yes. So Trevor, this isn't a Trevor Wynn story. That's not what this one's about, dude. Because I think this money management thing is about overcoming whatever they think they can or can't do. So put money aside. This is a story about controlling our weight in a healthy way. This is a story about overcoming our fears of failure at school and at work. This is a story about somebody coming to you and saying, I have a 1990 Saturn that I'd like to put a command start in. Will you do it for me? When I know very well that I have failed installing a command start in a 1990 Saturn. even as I say it, I'm like my brain's trying to figure out the wiring right now. That was like 20 years ago. Oh, bloody hell. Right? That's what failure does. The story, I think, is about that. What holds you back? What's the thing that if somebody came to you and said, I want you to do this, you're going, no, 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 I failed at that. I suck at that. I can't do that. I think that's what this story is about. So the business owner comes and says, how'd you do with what I gave you? I think this question is really, how have each one of us done in a life that's given us all kinds of opportunities? How have we done? Have we let our failures define us? Have we been driven by fear? How have we done? First employee comes back, $20 million, says, hey, that was a stretch for me, but you know what? I overcame my fear of failing, and I made you more money. He says, great, nicely done, well done, thank you. Next employee comes in, $500,000, says, oh man, you realize that I went bankrupt at one point in my life, right? You know that, right? I have a significant issue with money, but you know what? I worked through that, and I was able to make you more money. Which is great. Thank you. Fantastic. Third employee walks in, and I think the third employee is all of us, so we all walk in. How have you done with whatever your crap is, right? Your relationship you're scared of, the opportunity you don't want to do because you're scared it's going to go bad. Whatever it is your failure is making you run from, they say, how are you doing with that? The employee answers for all of us and says, I was scared. I was sure I was going to fail. I have so much baggage with this. I've done this wrong so many times. If you only knew who I am and how weak I am. I said, I did nothing with your money. So I did nothing. I took the opportunities I have. I dug a hole in my backyard. I stuck them in the hole and I covered them up. I did nothing. How many of us can resonate? Don't put up your hands. I've done nothing. Sure, certain areas of our lives, we're killing it. But there's those areas that we feel like failures in, that we've screwed up. And if someone would stand in front of us and say, what have you done with your life in those areas? What would we say? I've done nothing. See, this message is about what we call theological work. Don't worry, I'll come back to this and how it wraps up there in a second. Theological work has traditionally been characterized in a specific way post sola fide. Theological work actually means the study of God. But it's a really loaded statement because, currently, no one's been able to prove the existence of God. I'm not saying we don't believe. I'm not saying we don't interact. I'm not saying anything. Just saying even the statement that God exists in whatever format is not provable currently. We've only been working at it for, 8,000 years? I'm sure we'll get it to it soon, right? It's complex. And so post sola fide, faith alone, faith looked like this. What list of unprovable things do you believe are true? That's what faith meant. And theological work was getting the right list of unprovable things, the right list of them. You need to believe them all. So people say to me, oh, you're a Christian, yeah. So do you? And they start listing off unprovable things that they think that I believe are true. That's how the faith has been defined. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. This isn't me attacking that. But I do want to open it up to a broader conversation, because I think theological work, at least according to Jesus, isn't just believing certain things are true. That third employee, the one that's supposed to be us, believed all kinds of things about that business owner. She's a bit of a hard ass, you know. She makes money off other people. All true. But he says, what did you do? Not what did you believe, what did you do? And so I think at least part of the theological journey, a part of the spiritual journey, is what are we doing? How is whatever faith we have shaping the actions that we live? What did you do with what you're given? Isn't that what the story says? Now, a while ago, I started to explore a new way of understanding faith. I've been working on it for probably 15 years now, but lately it's kind of become more urgent for me. You see, instead of faith being this idea of I need to do nothing. I can go outside, drive my car into your car, laugh, walk away, and as long as I have the right beliefs, I'm golden, right? You can walk outside, go to the next barista who doesn't make your coffee right, punch them in the face, and as long as your beliefs are right, you're fine, aren't you? Sola fide, faith alone. Taken poorly, that's what it gives us permission to do. We can do whatever we want because it doesn't matter. It's what unprovable things do you believe are true? But what if there's a broader understanding of faith? What if faith is the courage to do the things that we believe? It's not just what things do I mentally assent to. What if it's how does what I believe change the way I behave right now? Someone asks me, will you install a command start in 1990 Saturn? The answer now is hell yes. Hell yes. Don't, if you have a Saturn, do not talk to me after this message. Right? Because that failure won't define me. You can go outside here and say, you know what? I care about people who have less than I do. And so instead of walking by somebody who's struggling, you stop and say, no, no, no. How do I help? Isn't that faith? The courage to act on our beliefs. Not just, what do I believe? What list of things do I believe? Which one do I have right? That was the worst kind of way of taking this. It's no, no. How does what are everything that we believe, all that we think, all of our connection to the divine, how does it change our actions? What do we do with what we're given? If faith for you is that, that's cool. But if you're looking for another way of looking at it, how does it feel to think about faith as the courage to act in line with what we believe? The courage to change the world, right? You see, this series, this anthem series, and by the way, Tell Me the Girls Don't Want to Have Fun isn't an awesome anthem. I asked Alessandra, I was like, okay, I love the song. Isn't it just about a party girl who does stupid things and then just says girls don't want to have fun? She says, actually, no, it was originally written by a man from a man's point of view. And so when Cyndi Lauper took it, she rewrote it for a different gender, saying, no, 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 this is for all of us. So it's actually not a party girl song. It's a song of equality. It's a pretty cool song. This is our anthem series. This is who Friends Church is. If you're asking us, you know, when you cut us, what do we bleed? This series is our attempt to address that. We started off this series by talking about the personal work that each of us need to do. Unless you're, of course, perfect, which I'm sure you all are, but I clearly have some issues that I got to deal with, right? And we talked about how our personal work has the ability to kind of spread itself out through the relationships in our lives, right? Husband does his personal work, starts to learn how to calm himself down. His interaction with his child goes really well. Instead of him blowing up like he normally does, he's like, I gotcha. That kid goes to a birthday party. Instead of being the little pain in the butt in the birthday party, they're fantastic. They have a great time with the kids. The hosts think, oh, this kid's amazing. That host now, instead of having to deal with the screaming kid all day, now has some capacity to deal with her life. She goes and talks to her neighbor who then, you see how this just kind of starts to trickle down? There's this idea that we're connected to every person in the world through six relationships. And when we do our personal work, it just flows out of us. Love just flows. Jeff talked last week about going, the spirit. What arena does the spiritual journey play in? Is it just about me sitting in, you know, in a mountaintop meditating? Or does it play out in the lives of relationships all around us? And today, my attempt anyways, is to say, I understand where Martin Luther came from. I understand sola fide. I understand that it feels beautiful to go, I don't have to do anything for me and God to be okay. But I think maybe there was a baby with the bathwater moment in that, wasn't there? Because if our actions mean nothing, doesn't it feel like there's something missing in that? Even Jesus said, what are you going to do? How are you going to live? And so our call to you today is this. How are you going to do your personal work and let it spread through your actions through the lives of everyone you touch? Because that's Friends Church. Recently, I was talking with a mom. She's had a pretty solid go of it. Two young kids who are full on. And she's struggling. Like, she's the stay-at-home parent. She said, you know what? I've been doing some work. And yesterday, just so you know, 2 weeks after we talked about this, I went to my favorite consignment place, bought two sweaters that feel amazing to help me just feel, to recharge me a little bit so I can bring that back to my family. Isn't that beautiful? That's Friends Church. Another couple I talked to, one of them has been going through a hell of a time. The other one's trying to figure out how to support them. And the one who's going through a hell of a time keeps demanding, like, no, no, I need you to do this for me. I need you to do this for me. I need you to do this for me. And the other one's going, like, this is way outside of what I can do. My family never did this. I've never done this. And so suddenly, there's a moment where she said, wait a second. I'm living my life right now that gets all about me. And you need to take care of me because I'm in this hard place and it's about me, me, me. I think I need to go and talk to my partner and say, how do we make this a win for you too? That's Friends Church. Talked with another parent who's working on becoming a better parent. And so they started to take classes with a place called Parenting Power. They started to get those classes into the school system. They've ran a bunch of them in the school system. Finally, she talked to me the other day. She said, let's get it here at Friends Church because wouldn't making more skillful parenting choices create love in this world? Wouldn't that spread love through my kids into the world, not to mention me? That's Friends Church. The people who are opening themselves up for the first time to something more, to this idea of spirituality, to the idea of something else guiding us as opposed to just pure selfishness. That's Friends Church. Every one of you who support this, chances are when you look around, you're going, this isn't just about me. I'm not just supporting the Friends Church for me. I'm supporting it for us all and all the people who need a Friends Church. That's Friends Church. You see, the journey we're on is a journey of healthy self connected through love to the world, open to the divine, coloring everything we do. And so the final question I want to leave you with is this. Does that feel like a fit for you? Because you know what? I think this can change our world right now. I think it can spread out from each one of us into everyone we know and literally make this world a better place for all of us. As long as we're willing. So the final anthem in Vince style is this. I want to invite you to be a part of this. To do your work. Open yourself up. And let it express itself through love to the people you know. Because I think that's going to do something pretty special. I think that's what Jesus was about. That's what I'm about. That's what Friend Church is about. I want to encourage you guys to be about it too.